ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 2, Text 5, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Munaya sadhu prishtoham bhavadbhir loka mangalam yat krita krishna samprashno Yenatma suprasidati Munaya sadhu prishtoham Bhavadbhir loka mangalam Yat krita krishna samprashno Yenatma suprasidati O sages, I have been justly questioned by you. Your questions are worthy because they relate to Lord Krishna and so are of relevance to the world's welfare. Only questions of this sort are capable of completely satisfying the self. Purport. Since it has been stated herein before that in the Bhagavatam the absolute truth is to be known, the questions of the sages of Naimisharanya are proper and just because they pertain to Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the absolute truth. Better the children can play outside rather than disturb here, as we have to discuss the absolute truth. So they could be taken outside and play there. In Bhagavad Gita, the Personality of Godhead says that in all the Vedas there is nothing but the urge for searching after Him, Lord Krishna. Thus the questions that pertain to Krishna are the sum and substance of all the Vedic inquiries. The whole world is full of questions and answers. The birds, beasts, and men are all busy in the matter of perpetual questions and answers. In the morning, the birds in the nest become busy with questions and answers, and in the evening also, the same birds come back and again become busy with questions and answers. The human being, unless he is fast asleep at night, is busy with questions and answers. The businessmen in the market are busy with questions and answers, and so also the lawyers in the court and the students in the schools and colleges. The legislators in the parliament are also busy with questions and answers, and the politicians and the press representatives are all busy with questions and answers. Although they go on making such questions and answers for their whole lives, they are not at all satisfied. Satisfaction of the soul can only be obtained by questions and answers on the subject of Krishna. Krishna is our most intimate master, friend, father, or son, and object of conjugal love. Forgetting Krishna, we have created so many objects of questions and answers, but none of them are able to give us complete satisfaction. All things, but Krishna, give temporary satisfaction also. So if we are to have complete satisfaction, we must take to the questions and answers about Krishna. We cannot live for a moment without being questioned or without giving answers. because the Srimad Bhagavatam deals with questions and answers that are related to Krishna, we can derive the highest satisfaction only by reading and hearing this transcendental literature. One should learn the Srimad Bhagavatam and make an all-around solution to all problems pertaining to social, political, or religious matters. Srimad Bhagavatam and Krishna are the sum total of all things. Munaya sadhu prishtoham bhavadbhir lokamangalam yatkrita krishna samprashno yenatma supraseedati. The difference between a living entity and a non-living entity, between spirit and matter, is consciousness. That which is living is conscious. That which is not living is unconscious. Of course, we use the word unconscious also for someone who has lost consciousness due to an injury or something like that. But consciousness is intrinsic to the living being. It may be covered over deeply, as in a coma or deep sleep, but that is an abnormal condition. The basic difference between a living being and a non-living being is the presence or absence of consciousness. And consciousness means awareness of various objects, phenomena, which means knowledge. Another way we can say that the difference between a living being and a non-living being is that they have knowledge. Knowledge is acquired, how? By the senses. Not only by the senses. Only very initial knowledge is attained via the senses. Better knowledge is attained by learning from others. For instance, if we see the sun rising, we cannot ascertain how far away it is just by seeing. We have to learn that by hearing from others. And how did others learn that the sun is, so they say, how many miles away from the earth? How many miles away from you is the sun? Anyone? Any kids? Don't know. Oh. Anyone? It's supposed to be 93 million miles, according to what the scientists say, which fits pretty much with the Puranic descriptions also. If you didn't know from learning it at school, you might have learned it from reading Prabhupada's purports to the Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, so you just learned something. The knowledge is there in the human beings and the animals, but the animals also are aware. How do we get knowledge? By observing and by questioning. How did the scientist find out that the sun is 93 million miles away? Well, they were curious. They had curiosity and they devised the means to find out. And to divide, first of all, they wanted to know how far away the sun is. Of course, it's not just one question, but if someone is to study astronomy or any other subject, there'll be a whole bundle of questions which are interrelated. So the question, how far the sun away is, and then how are you going to find out? And that brings another whole set of questions. And that finding out the answers to questions is how human society develops. So nowadays, even if we're underground and there's no way for the sunlight to come inside, we can still be in light, which is as much as the sunlight, even during the night, thanks to Thomas Edison, or maybe others also, who discovered how to harness the power of electricity in various ways, including making a light. Of course, these kind of lights weren't invented by Thomas Edison, but building on his discoveries, because he was questioning how can we harness electricity for this or that or the other? And the whole of science has developed due to questioning, and we know the names of great scientists and technologists. Who can say the names of some great children? Who can say the name of great scientists and technologists? Albert Einstein. Okay, that was an easy one, right? Anyone else? There's so many. Isaac Newton. Sir Isaac Newton, please give him proper respect. Even though he's dead long ago and might be crawling around as an ant here somewhere. Then, others? Edwin Aldrin. Edwin Aldrin. Does he qualify as a scientist? I guess so, kind of. Madame Curie. From the female side. There have been female scientists also. Okay, we won't go on. Who's the greatest scientist of all? I think, who did you say? Albert Einstein. No, wrong. Who's the greatest scientist? Krishna. Okay, thank you. All right. And so I'm asking you a question, and I gave you the answer. Krishna is the greatest scientist. Okay, so the scientists, they're much lauded for their contributions, and in all different fields, just like the Europeans, they sailed across the ocean and they discovered India. Of course, there'd been civilization going on, but for many centuries before the Europeans found their way to India. Who was the first European to land in India? Vasco da Gama. Okay, very good. You all know that. They taught you that, huh? In the where did he land? Goa, they say. Okay, so he was a great discoverer, because you got discovered by the Europeans. That means you got recognized by actually civilized people like Vasco da Gama and other highly civilized people who taught things like how to kill cows and other civilized things. Not very civilized. Philosophy, great philosophers. This is a question and answer session. Great philosophers. Now you already got the answer to that one. Krishna. Great philosophers. Anyone? India is a land of great philosophers. Socrates. If you say great in the Western country, they study philosophy. They study Socrates, Plato, Plotinus, the Greek foundation, and then they go on. There's a bit of a gap, and then they jump to Descartes. But what about Shankara, Ramanuja, Madhva? Madhvacharya. You from Madhva's background, by any chance? Yeah. And before them, there were the classic, the Gautam, Karnad, Yajnavalkya, but they're not counted as philosophers because only Westerners are allowed to be philosophers. Sarcasm.
Don't take it seriously.
Okay, so far, everything that we've discussed so far in this talk, most of it is just a bunch of rubbish. According to what we read in the Bhagavatam, that only questions in relationship to Krishna are of actual relevance to the world's welfare. So the fact that we have electric light here is useful for discussing Krishna in this land, which you call Kanaya Desh. And the very fact that you're here and you can fly from here to your homeland in this life is all thanks to questions and answers not asked about Krishna. On the other hand, if they hadn't done all this, then you'd probably be asking a lot more about Krishna than if they'd had the whole modern... If they didn't have this modern civilization, then people would still be asking about Krishna instead of asking... What do they ask about? People, they ask more about Virat Kohli and who's the big film star these days, whatever. People are asking more about that, which is also a product of modern civilization, because someone made some questions, how can we brainwash people with all nonsense? And they came up with modern technology. Questions and answers should be about Krishna. That is the point. Do they teach you that at school? No, I know the answer to that one. If we ask them to put it in the school curriculum, will they agree? No. What's going on in the name of civilization is not actually for the world's welfare. They say society has developed, right? It's developed so that instead of sitting in a peaceful country situation with flowers and birds and trees, we're sitting underground and the air's all completely polluted 24 hours a day all around us. And this is called advancement of civilization. Yeah, that's right. All useless questions. What are the questions? What are the basic questions people ask? We in English, we can say the words who, what, why, when, where, which, comes as all the W's first, and then how. These, why, yeah, I think I said that, didn't I? Why? That's actually the most important question of all. Why? Why? What am I doing here? Why? What? Or why am I here? Why am I here? What am I doing? What's it all about? What's the meaning of life? So that's the beginning of philosophy, or at least the branch of philosophy known as metaphysics, which investigates questions like why are we here and the meaning of life. Is there any meaning to life? What is the meaning of life? The birds and bees. Birds, not bees. Krishna Prabhupada gives the example of birds. They also ask questions, not in terms of who, what, why, when, where. They don't have, as far as we know, a developed language. But they're also looking to find out, where is food? Ahara nidra bhaya maitun. Where is food? How can we sleep comfortably? Where are my enemies? I have to avoid them. All living beings have enemies in this material world. Even the lion, the very powerful lion, is the famous motif in Indian art is, you'll see in temples, lions and elephants fighting. And nowadays the lion can be shot with a bullet, or even previously in Africa, that tribe, they're very tall people, they used to kill with spears. The name I just don't remember just now. Maasai. Maasai, yeah, that's it. They used to go and kill with spears, lions. So even the lion has enemies. Even the big, powerful fish, they have enemies, at least humans. Humans are probably the enemies of more species than any other. In fact, the humans are enemies of all species, and because with their advancement, they're killing daily so many animals, directly and indirectly, directly in slaughterhouses and indirectly by pollution, destruction of habitat, and so on. So animals are asking about eating, sleeping, and mating. Where is sex? How can I get sex? So these are the basic questions that animals ask. The difference between animals and humans is analyzed as follows. Ahara nidra bhaya maitunam cha samaname tat pashu bhyanaranam. And the next line is dharmo hite isham adhiko visesham dharmena hina pashu bhyanaranam. There's another rendering of this. Gyano hite isham adhiko visesham gyanena hina pashubhya naranam. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, humans and animals have in common. What differentiates a human from an animal is dharma, or another word is also given, knowledge, jnana. Now obviously the animals have some kind of knowledge also. The animals can understand if you're a friend or an enemy, or if you feed an animal daily, they'll probably think of you as a friend, like that. Just I was in Dubai and walking on the Abra, if you know what that is, the creek as it's called in English, and sat down and a cat came in. I was just sitting down to drink some water, and a cat came. I guess they thought, the two cats, and they thought that people are going to feed them because the restaurants in that area. Of course, the restaurants are closed early in the morning. So they see humans as sources of food. Although the cats that run around wild in Mangaf and Salmia, they're afraid of humans. No one feeds them, it seems. They find their food here and there. So eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, that when it says gyano hitesham adhiko visesham, the special prerogative of human life is knowledge. It doesn't mean knowledge about eating, sleeping, mating, and defending, because that the animals also do. And then what's the difference between a human and an animal? You may say a human is more advanced. Maybe in some ways we build big planes like the Boeing 7, what was it? The one that's withdrawn, you must know that. 737, is it? 787, 787, that's withdrawn from use due to being somewhat dangerous, twice crashed and killed everyone on board. But we can't, the birds, they don't need to make any technology to fly, they just fly. So they're better in that than we are. And we can find whatever humans can do in terms of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. We see that in many instances, the animals, they can do better. They don't have to They don't have to work hard to get their food, in most cases. That by the grace of Krishna, they get without their working hard. They just look here and there, where is some food, and they find it. They don't cultivate crops or have battery farms or any such thing. So the knowledge, asking who, what, why, when, where, how, which, these questions are the prerogative of human life. And we can employ these questions to eat, sleep, mate and defend in a very sophisticated way. But if our civilization, which we are very proud of, only consists of eating, sleeping, mating and defending in a sophisticated way, then intrinsically it's not different from the society of the animals. It's at the same level of consciousness. The same level of consciousness. You may say, no, we're so sophisticated, we're so advanced. But the same basic the same basic motivation is there. So, Gyan means to understand. First of all, we should ask the question, what's the most important question? Because life is short. What's the most important thing we have to learn? We may think, well, what's the most important thing you have to learn at school? They don't teach you that at school, madam. That's the most important thing you have to learn, yes, that you're not the body. But at school, what do they tell you in the school? What's the most important thing you have to learn? You have to learn to study. You have to learn how to become completely brainwashed so you work hard all your life and think that you're a success in doing so. You've all heard of Cambridge University. Have you heard of Cambridge University? Young children, you're not old enough yet for that. Okay, so I have a friend, godbrother, who went to Cambridge University, which is considered very prestigious. And he told me, he also wrote an article in Back to Godhead magazine describing this, that they had when they first went, I think it's called a convocation ceremony, is it? When the students first go, see, I'm asking a question, I wasn't sure about that. So when the students all first went to the university, some senior professor stood up and told them that the most important thing you have to learn while you're here at university is how to hold your drink. Hold your drink means you're able to drink 5 or 6 whiskies and still stand up and hold at least a semi-intelligible conversation with others. That's called holding your drink. And to do that, you have to practice. Doesn't come immediately. And of course, the professor didn't explain that because all the students knew what that meant. In anyone growing up in England knows what the phrase hold your drink means. In fact, well, I won't talk about myself, but one of my uncles praised me once. But anyway, that's before I joined a school. So the professor said that. He said, you can get through life without a university degree, but you can't get through life without holding your drink. In other words, in civilized society, you don't necessarily have to have a university degree, but you have to be able to hold your drink, which is a symptom of a civilized person, according to their understanding. Okay, so what are we getting at here? Forgetting Krishna, Srila Prabhupada writes, we have created so many objects of questions and answers, but none of them are able to give us complete satisfaction. This is the question that should be asked. Why are we doing so many things, working so hard? We've developed such a great civilization. I am from Britain. Da, 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 da. Here you see is a photo of sorts of a bus. Where's that bus from? London, London. You see, it's iconic that people all over the world can recognize a red double-decker bus is from London. And what's the glory of that? I don't know, but it's supposed supposed to be a symbol of London. And even in Kuwait, I think they have. There's an imitation. And Dubai also. They have imitation because they think if we're really going to be civilized, we have to have red double-decker buses. That's the sign of an advanced civilization. So apart from double-decker buses, Britain has developed so many things. We said the names of so many great personalities, right? Isaac Newton. Actually, we didn't say. You were saying all foreigners, Albert Einstein and Edwin Aldrin. And come on, there are so many great British people who contributed to the progress of the human race. Yeah, and a few Jews also, like Albert Einstein. Oh, shouldn't say anything against Jews. Be careful. But no one's asking the question that even though we have such an advanced civilization, we're not satisfied. Then another question comes, what's the point of all the civilization, of having red double-decker buses and big cities with traffic jams and pollution and schools that indoctrinate children that they have to study and work hard so they can become a member of this civilization? And no one ever thinks, well, what's the point of having such a civilization if we're not satisfied? If at heart we feel anxiety, we don't know what happens after death. We don't, which means we don't know why we're living exactly. Song some in Salem he showed you, what are we living for? The rent collectors knocking at the door. It's a song from the 1970s called Dead End Street, with the idea that your whole life is like a dead end. One lady from England recently told me that her grandson, I believe it was, grandson or granddaughter, 15 years old, he's saying, well, what's the point of living? You live and you die, and what's the point? That's a good question. Will they give the answer in the school? No. They'll tell, what will they say if you ask a question like that? What will they say? What do you think? You try it, try it. They'll say, I don't know. Come on, teachers don't say, I don't know. Keep quiet. That's probably what they'll say. Yes. Try it, try it. If you're bold enough, you can try it tomorrow. When you get back to that slaughterhouse, no, called a school. You can, they'll say, don't ask silly questions. We have more important things to get on with, just like how you can study very hard from the age of, even before you come out of the womb, practically, right? They made kindergarten, then pre-kindergarten, then pre-pre-kindergarten. Probably they'll start indoctrinating you even before you come out of the womb. So they make you work hard, study. And you see the kids in India, they before they go to school, they have tuition starting from 5:30 in the morning, something like that. And when they come back from school, they have tuitions. So practically they're studying. And then if they're lucky enough to, or whatever, it's not just luck, it's hard work, to go, they, then they can go on to a good university or good college where they have to work hard more. And as a result of studying and working hard for 20 years or so, they can get a good job. And a good job means you work hard. And that there's a whole life goes in working hard. And if you don't spend all your money in medical treatment for having lived a life which is quite unnatural, then you can spend your retirement money on enjoying yourself when the body's too worn out to enjoy anything. And that's why they retire you, because you can't do any more work, and so they retire you. And that's called a good life. Why don't people think about this? Does it make any sense? Why should we live a life like that? Well, you can ask your teachers. You might get expelled from the school if you persist in asking. Seriously, they don't appreciate such questions. People actually become upset and angry if you ask such questions, because it's just like touching a raw nerve. It hurts. Because deep inside everyone's heart, everyone knows, I'm not happy, I'm not satisfied. My life is useless. So if you ask, it's too painful. And they become upset. They just close, turn.
I think study in itself is not bad. Whatever you study is going to add to your knowledge.
Whatever you study is going to add to your knowledge.
Yeah, but you have to dedicate it to Krishna.
Learning things which are extrinsic. You're saying you have to dedicate everything to Krishna. Study itself is not bad. But then we have to see what is actually pleasing to Krishna. For instance, if we learn how to write a computer program for making highly advanced automated slaughterhouses, that won't be pleasing to Krishna. The point is to directly think of Krishna. If we think of anything but Krishna at the time of death, then what happens? Okay, let's have a shlok. Time for a shlok. You had a lot of jokes, now it's time for a shlok. What happens if we remember Krishna at the time of death? Antakale chamameva smaran muktva kalevaram yah prayati samadbhavam tyajat jati nastyatra sangshat. One who remembers me at the time of death, Krishna says, goes to me, without a doubt. But if our consciousness is filled with all kinds of things other than Krishna, and especially if we don't understand the relationship with Krishna, then we will get born again and miss the opportunity of human life. But it's not just this, it's not just the study and all the things they teach you. Yesterday we were in a school and you could see how so many complex things they're studying. Even how to, did you see there was a sign about how to dance? It was so complicated, all the different things. Our dancing is very easy. There's no training required. You just chant Hare Krishna and put your hands in the air, and it's very easy and nice. But they make it, the poor children, even to dance, it's all regimented, and there's so many things they have to learn. So it's a whole attitude that they inculcate in you. The whole attitude although it's not spoken, the idea is given that you have to earn money, and that will be good. How it's good, they don't say. Even that you'll be happy. Happiness isn't a goal. They don't teach you that you should be happy. They teach you should work hard and earn money. Work hard is the main thing. And the carrot that they put as a bait is that you'll get money. And I suppose it's the idea is that by getting money you'll be more happy. But anyone with even slightly awakened intelligence knows that money does not equal, you know that in mathematics you have an equal sign with a slash through it. Money does not equal happiness. Of course, poverty often equals misery. That's not necessarily. But poverty often equals misery. That may be also due to the attitude of people. But what constitutes poverty? If you have enough to eat, you have a place to sleep, then your basic needs are taken care of. But people think poverty means if you can't afford the latest iPhone. That's called poverty. So for a poor person to get more money might make him feel more happy. But it doesn't satisfy the heart. And then if you get more and more and more and more money above enough for your basic needs, it definitely doesn't translate into more and more happiness. So this Srimad Bhagavatam gives these very important terms. Yena atma suprasidati, by which the atma, the very core of our being, the self, suprasidati, is most satisfied or pleased. Now, implicit in this statement, yena atma suprasidati, implicit in this is the understanding that we are eternal living beings called atma, jivatma. That's already understood. But the schools and colleges, they don't teach that. The parents don't teach that. They don't know it themselves. That we are eternal living beings. That's the beginning of knowledge. Krishna begins his instruction in Bhagavad Gita by teaching that we are not the body. We're eternal living beings. Actually, Arjuna in the beginning, he wasn't asking questions. He was instructing Krishna. He thought he would instruct Krishna about dharma. And Krishna gave him a few slaps, verbal slaps, and started to instruct him. And then Arjuna started asking questions. He took the position of a disciple, Shishyaste Hang Shadi Mang Tuang Prapannam. And he asked questions throughout Bhagavad Gita. We find many chapters begin with Arjuna asking questions. In the third chapter, near the beginning of the fourth chapter, at the beginning of the fifth chapter, in the tenth chapter, 11th chapter, that wasn't exactly a question, that was a request. The beginning of the 12th chapter, very important, Arjuna's inquiry. In the beginning of the 13th chapter, some editions of Gita introduce it with a question from Arjuna, and others don't. I'm shooting through here. 18th chapter, Arjuna asks questions. So these questions, there, and the answers, Bhagavad Gita, they're concerned with satisfaction of the self. Arjuna thought that he could not be satisfied, could not be happy by fighting. He thought it was wrong to fight. He was speaking on the platform of dharma, what is right and what is wrong. With the understanding that by doing wrong we cannot be happy. We should do the right thing. Now we have dharmo hitesham adhiko vishesham, gyano hitesham adhiko vishesham. Dharma or jnana is the specific difference between humans and animals. But we see from Arjuna's bold statement at the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, he was trying to teach Krishna about dharma. That dharma must be based on knowledge. Otherwise, without proper knowledge, we cannot know what is right and what is wrong. Then how to find out? How to find out, then we find here from the sages at Naimisharanya, they're asking Suta Goswami, they have asked him to tell them their question was that there's so much knowledge, and they were referring to Vedic knowledge, what to speak of knowledge. Actually, there's no knowledge outside Vedic knowledge, because Veda means vidya, knowledge. But apart from that which is within the corpus of Vedic literature, there's also so much knowledge. But they were saying, there's so much knowledge. There's so many things to be learned. But life is short, especially in Kali Yuga. And in Kali Yuga, who knows the verse? Prayanal payusha sabhya kalavasmin yuge janaha mandasu manda matayo manda bhagya hi upadrutaha. And people in Kali Yuga, not only is their life is short, but they're not good candidates for learning about spiritual matters, because they're unlucky, their minds are polluted, their minds are always disturbed, they're lazy. To understand spiritual knowledge, to understand any knowledge, means one has to work hard, one has to make an effort. So they asked, Shonakadi Rishi, Shonak Rishi on behalf of the sages at Naimisharanya, asked Suta Goswami that you have studied all the Vedic literature, you tell us what is the essence. And they themselves then gave a clue by talking about Krishna. And here, Suta Goswami has just begun his reply, which will continue throughout the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. How did he reply? What was his reply? What did he first say in replying to the sages who had asked him to tell them the essence? Well, the first thing he did was offer obeisance to his guru, Shukadev. That was the first thing, because to get knowledge and to give knowledge, we have to ask from others. In the school, we take knowledge that has been given by others. If we want to become a physicist at the level of Einstein, there are two possible ways we could go about it. We could start just by knowing nothing and think about it and think about different things and work things out. And it's very unlikely that we'd get as far as the level of Newton, let alone Einstein. We wouldn't be able to do anything, because how does it work? What are the conventions? What are the, for instance, using a number, a numerical system based on zero. If we don't know that, you can't even begin to do it. We just take it for granted because we're so used to it. But the Romans didn't have it, which makes me wonder how they built aqueducts and did things like that. Because how do they do it? Because how can you do geometry and engineering without zero? Who would think? there are so many things to be understood. Even if you did come to such a level, you wouldn't be able to communicate it to others unless you opt into a standard system of reference. If you draw three lines and they're all joined together, the end of one line is joined to another line, and the other end of that line is joined to another line, which joins the first line. And that's called a triangle. Okay. So if you want to give it another word, then people won't understand. So we opt into a system of knowledge to even begin to understand anything, which means we have to learn from others. In spiritual matters, all the more so, as it's a very subtle and difficult to understand science. So first of all, we have to offer obeisance to the gurus who teach us, and they teach us on the basis of what they have heard from others. And ultimately, that goes back to Krishna, who's the original guru, Krishnam Vandam. Krishnam Vande Jagat Guru. So, first of all, he offered obeisance verbally to Shukdev. Then, Narayanam Namaskritya Narang Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayamudirayet. He offers obeisances to Nara Narayana, to the personality of Godhead, Narayana, and to Nara Narayan Rishi, to Sarasvati Devi, the goddess of learning, and to Vyas. Then, so he started off by offering obeisance to those who have given him knowledge, and then before he begins to answer the questions, he congratulates the rishis, the munis who have asked him these questions. It wasn't just one question, it was a series of questions. But that was the basis of it all. Now, we find in other Puranas that the sages are asking Sut Goswami so many questions, and therefore we have other Puranas also. But he's congratulating them that, as Prabhupada translates here, the word sadhu. Normally, how would you translate the word sadhu? When we say sadhu, what do we think? We think of a holy person, or we think of another meaning is something which is good, therefore we may say sadhu, sadhu. But here Srila Prabhupada has translated the word sadhu as this is relevant. Because all other questions, they're not really relevant to loka mangalam, to the benefit for individual persons and benefit for everyone. They're not relevant. What is the capital of Bahrain?
Manama.
Okay. Good. First prize. We're not going to give you any prize. Okay, he got the answer right. He's an expert in the political geography of Bahrain. At least he knows the name of the capital. But the question and the answer, although it's useful, it could be useful, not in our day-to-day life, if you get up and brush your teeth, whether you know or not that the capital of Bahrain is Manama. But it might be useful, it would be useful if you're, for instance, doing business in this area. But it's not useful to the world's welfare to know that. And anything we say, Albert Einstein has discovered general relativity, special relativity. We may say, well, that's of relevance to the world's welfare. If it wasn't for that, along with quantum theory, we couldn't have developed so many objects that we now consider to be intrinsic to our civilization. The whole internet and computers, digital devices, the science has developed, or technologies has developed on the basis of this knowledge. But it's not relevant to the world's welfare, because if it doesn't satisfy us, then what's the point? And even if we feel satisfied, now I got the latest iPhone, I feel satisfied, then a day later we won't feel satisfied. And at the time of death, we simply get another birth, then what's the point? Real satisfaction, Atma, yena Atma supersedati, how the soul can be fully satisfied. We can't be satisfied as long as we're going from body to body to body to body. So questions about Krishna, they are conducive to the world's welfare, because the world's welfare, the welfare of the people of the world, lies in their coming out of this world. Because as long as we're in this world, we have to suffer. This is the world of suffering. Dukhalayama shashvatam anityam asukam lokam. Then imam prapya bhajasvamam. The persons who worship Krishna in this temporary, miserable world, they can attain to Krishna. So that's the real point. Otherwise, all the knowledge that we're getting, if we don't understand this point, janma karma chame devyame vangyo veti tatvataha tyaktva dehang punarjanma naiti mameti sorjana, that understanding Krishna and his activities to be fully transcendental to this world, understanding this part, then we don't have to get born again in this world. This is for our welfare. It's for the world's, for everyone's welfare. So questions and answers should be about Krishna. So why are the questions and answers not going on about Krishna? Why not? Nate vidu swarata gating hi Vishnum. They don't know that the goal of life is Vishnu. Then why not? There are so many intelligent people. Albert Einstein was a very intelligent person. There are so many who are the most intelligent people in the world today? All of you, because you're chanting Hare Krishna. But materially speaking, Nobel Prize winners. India's had its share of Nobel Prize winners. I think two, huh? Two? One. Nobel Prize winner, the Rabindranath Tagore was a long time ago, long time ago. C.V. Raman. Did they give him a Nobel Prize? They gave him a Nobel Prize. Then recently in economics, Amartya Sen and his wife. Okay, there have been a few Indian Nobel Prizes. I was just looking yesterday at a website with where the PhDs, Indians submit their PhDs, and you can access it on the Shodganga website. There's thousands and tens of thousands of PhDs. So with quite some searching, I found something of some spiritual interest. So people, they're so intelligent, so many intelligent people. Then why don't they ask these questions? Why don't they ask the really important questions? Who are we? Why are we suffering? How can we get out of birth and death? Is there birth and death? Why don't they ask? Nate vidu swarta gating hi Vishnum. They don't know that the goal of life is Vishnu. Does anyone know the verse that comes before this? In Bhagavata. Ah, you got it. Very good. Thank you. Matiyana krishne paratasvato va mito vipadyeta grihavratanam adanta gobhir vishatang tamisram punaf punas charvita charvananam. They have a... The very reason for being in this world is aversion to Krishna. Krishna bahir mukh hoya bhogavancha kare nikatastha mayatare japatiya dhare. When we become averse to Krishna, then we, because as living beings conscious, we have desires, so the desire to serve Krishna becomes morphed into the desire to enjoy materially, and then Maya captures us. So we're in this material world because we have an aversion to Krishna. Matiyana krishne paratasvato va. By discussing philosophy, by trying to work things out by ourselves, even if someone tries to tell people, they're not inclined to Krishna. They're inclined to enjoy their senses. not to control their senses, and thus they enter into the deepest darkness of ignorance, and their whole existence, for all their advancement, is simply chewing the chewed again and again. There's nothing there. However materially we advance, there's nothing there to satisfy us. It's like chewing the chewed. You get some sugar cane, chew it, spit it out, and then say, why don't I spit it out? That's sugar cane. That sugar cane is good. And then you pick it up and start chewing it again. But there's nothing there. There's no juice left. So this is what we're doing. And then, nate vidu swarthagatinghi vishnam. They don't know that the real goal of life is Vishnu. Durashaya bahirata manina. They desire, they have so many desires, so many hopes, but it doesn't satisfy us. Durashya is simply on the external platform, external to our real needs. Then, andhayatandhaya rupaniyamanas te pisha tantram urudam nibadhaha. We have so many experts who are teaching us, but they are also blind. They can give all the right answers, just like you gave the right answer. What was the question?
Capital of Bahrain.
What is the capital of Bahrain? You gave the right answer. But it was the right answer, but I gave the wrong question. Because what is the capital of Bahrain has no relevance to our real need, which is to understand Krishna. So all these experts, we have experts, not only they're experts in so many subjects, but they're inventing more and more subjects to become expert about. So they give the right answers to the wrong questions. The questions they ask in themselves are wrong. Who, what, why, when, where, how, which. But what is the central point? Krishna, as Srila Prabhupada writes here. The central point is Krishna. Yeah, I can't find it just now. So the whole society is developed by giving knowledge on the wrong point. For instance, let's say that someone has a problem, okay, a physical problem. Think of a disease. Come on, big brains here. Tell me the name of one disease. Diabetes, okay. If you have a diabetes problem, you have to go to who?
Doctor.
To the doctor, okay. That wasn't it was so easy you couldn't think of it. Thought it was a trick question. Specifically, which specialist? Well, first of all, you have to go to a doctor, and then a general practitioner, and then he'll take you some money and write something on a piece of paper, or nowadays type it, and send you to a specialist who'll take more money, of course. So what are they called? Diabetician. I can't hear because you're all speaking at once.
Diabetologist,
is that right? It's called a diabetologist. Oh, that's it. It should have been an easy one, but I didn't know. Now I know. I learned something. But it's useless. Unless I have diabetes, which I don't have. Which I don't have. And even if I didn't know, then I could go to a doctor and he'd send me. And you don't have to know, anyway. So, okay, say you have a diabetes problem. Say, you can go to this car mechanic. You go to the car mechanic if you have diabetes. And you go to him and he says, what's the point of going to a car mechanic? Why should I go to a car mechanic? No, he's very good at mending cars. Any car you bring, he can mend it, even a Mercedes. Any kind of car, he's expert in mending cars. Yeah, but that's not my problem. Well, anyway, you know, he's a very intelligent person, and he knows all the answers that you need for mending cars. But you're going, There's an English saying, barking up the wrong tree. Do you know what that means? Do you know what that means, barking up the wrong tree? No. Anyone? You know what it means? Oh, tell us. You're approaching the wrong person. What it means literally is, the idea is that a dog is chasing a cat. A cat runs into a forest. The cat runs up a tree. And the dog goes under a tree and is barking at the cat, but it's the wrong tree. The cat's in another tree. So that's called barking up the wrong tree, which means you're doing the right thing in the wrong place. For a dog, it's the right thing to bark at cats. Why? Krishna hardwired them like that. They're doing the right thing in the wrong place. Or asking, so you go to the car mechanic and say that, well, you know, I'm feeling very weak and passing a lot of urine and I can't say. And he says, so he tells him, okay, just put your car in here and I'll have a look at it and probably needs an oil change and it's irrelevant. It's irrelevant to his problem. So the whole of material life is we're getting very good answers to all the wrong questions. So the best thing they can teach you at school is how to ask the right questions. That's the first thing. How to ask, but if you ask the right questions, they'll throw you out of the school because they don't know and they don't want to know. But then if you ask the right questions, just like you may go and say, you see, I have passing so much urine and feeling very weak. And you may be able to say what your problem is and ask, but you have to know who to approach. You may be the best car mechanic in the history of cars, but it's useless asking such a person if you have a medical problem. Of course, he might also peripherally know something about medicine, but really you have to go to an expert. He may be very good at welding cars, and so he may say, well, I'll weld you. Welding broken parts. I say, I'll weld you into shape. Oh, no, thank you. So we have to know where to go to get the right answer. Tadvijnanartham sagurum evabhigacchet. When one has seen that everything in this world is miserable and temporary, then one should go to a guru. And guru means Shrotriyang Brahmanishtam. He's heard. He hasn't just made up something on the spot. He knows. He's competent to give the right answers. And Brahmanishtam. He's fully situated in knowledge of Brahman, which means Krishna. That's Srimad Bhagavatam. Gives the understanding of Brahma, what is the absolute truth. So go to the right expert. There's so many experts. We're asking all the wrong questions. They're not relevant to our real welfare because we don't know that the real goal is Krishna. We may say, well, they're the right questions. Otherwise, how could we develop so much technology and science and have so much history and geography and philosophy? So the people asked questions relevant to the subject at hand, but then the subject at hand is ultimately meaningless. Just like, for instance, in chess requires a good level of intelligence to become expert in. But ultimately, what is the point? You may ask questions, okay, now I got into this situation, what should I do? Maybe you can ask a grandmaster, what should I do? But ultimately, what's the point? It's all meaningless. It's simply some pieces on a board, or if you're previously there was one. Who is it? Was that Akbar? He kept real humans to play chess with, on a big board, on a field. So one Indian king, if you're in that situation. But pieces on a board, and you're moving them around, and because other chess players think that chess is something worth applying your intelligence to, they take it very seriously. But it's meaningless. And that goes also for cricket. And ultimately for everything, if it's not in relation to our real need. Again, you can say that, you say, I have a terrible pain in my stomach. Well, this person, he can tell you what to do if you're in a fix. You've only got a king and two pawns, and the other side has king, queen, seven pawns, two knights, two rooks. And what do you do in such a situation? What's the answer? Resign. That's a bit of an extreme example. But you can ask, I'm in trouble. He can help you, this person. Or the same example, the karmic, I'm in trouble, I've got a pain in my stomach. Oh, he can help you. You see, I had so many times I had a problem with my car, he always helped me. Barking up the wrong tree. So we have to know which questions to ask. That requires some intelligence and some good fortune. Actually, children, mostly, if they're a little bit bright, they ask such questions, but then it's stamped out. They're not allowed to. Often we find if we go to schools of young children, then they ask very good questions. If you go to older children, first of all, they don't listen at all because they have no interest, because it's been stomped out by their so-called education. Have you seen sometimes people wear a t-shirt? I've seen in the West. I was born intelligent, but then I got an education. So I was very happy to see yesterday that the children, they're reciting shlokas very nicely. But you have to teach the meaning also. One time in Dallas, I believe it was, somewhere in America, Srila Prabhupada's disciples, they brought the children before him and they recited shlokas. They'd been taught to recite shlokas. And then Prabhupada asked, do they know the meaning? And they didn't. So you have to give the meaning also. Ultimately, the meaning is more important than the Sanskrit words. Both are important, but we have to know the meaning. That's more difficult to teach, actually. That's more difficult. To understand the Bhagavad Gita, that's more difficult. That requires philosophical understanding. Who will study Bhagavad Gita? Who is the proper person to understand? A person who understands that I am suffering. Why? How can I get out of this? So these topics should be discussed, topics of Krishna. And we shouldn't be illusioned by the phantasmagoria of civilization and so many important people saying so many important things. We should understand that everything in this world, without Krishna, they're all ultimately meaningless. It doesn't help us. At the time of death, if we've been a very rich person, a very famous person, a very popular person, a very knowledgeable person, But if we don't remember Krishna, if we haven't developed love of Krishna, then what does Bhagavatam say about that? Shrama eva hi kevalam. We can say he worked hard and that's all. But the donkey is also working hard. There's no benefit. Therefore, jaro vidya jato mayar bhaibhav tomar bhajane badha. Anitya sangsare moha janami ajiv ke kareye gadha. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. He himself was highly educated from the material point of view. He says that knowledge of all that is material is a great display of illusion, of maya. And it is an obstacle. Being attached to that, of course, there's nothing wrong with learning some things about the material world, although we shouldn't be attached to it. For living and operating in this world, we need some modicum of knowledge about it. But to think that mundane knowledge or knowledge of things not connected to Krishna is important in and of itself, that is an obstacle in becoming Krishna conscious. It simply gives rise to more illusion in this world where everything is temporary and makes the jiva, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, into an ass. Why an ass? Why should someone who's highly learned be called an ass? Well, an ass carries, we don't see so much nowadays because of modern vehicles, tempos and whatnot. An ass carries rocks, have you seen? They carry rocks on their back. Or the dobis used to have big piles of cloths. And you'd see there's a little head sticking out the front, a tail sticking out the back, and four spindly legs, and then a huge pile of cloth, heavy. Or otherwise they carry rocks. So they carry heavy burdens which are of no value to themselves. That's what they do. So in the same way, we amass mundane knowledge, but it's of no value to us. Therefore, simply amassing material knowledge, we become like asses. And like an ass, we may start off very enthusiastic, but we end up fading away. Have you heard the ass? What is the ass? How does the ass make a noise? Donkey. Braying is the English word, but how does it sound like? Anyone want to imitate? Have you heard? They start off very loud and it becomes very quiet. So it's like that. We become very enthusiastic, so wonderful, and it all ends up nothing. Nothing to live for, nothing to, no purpose. So unless we know that Krishna, everything is meant to be directed toward Krishna, then our existence has meaning. Otherwise, all useless. Shrama eva hi kevalam. Simply a waste of time. Hard work with nothing gained. Does anyone have any question? You going to ask me a question?
No.
No. I thought you might ask me what's the capital of Saudi Arabia. No. You don't ask such silly questions like I do.
I already know.
You already know, so you wouldn't bother asking me. Okay. But there's another reason you could ask, just like I asked, what's the capital of Bahrain? I already knew the answer, then why did I ask? Now I must now think about that. Why did I ask? Why does the teacher at school ask you questions? To see if you know.
Yeah.
Right? So it's not necessary. You may know, but you still may ask someone.
You're guiding from the goal.
Sorry?
This is called like a misguiding from the goal, from the education to...
Misguiding from the goal, yeah. Andhayata andhayarupa niyamanas. Blind leading the blind.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. In Lord Rama's pastimes,
probably getting off the subject here. There could be millions of questions. Go on.
Hare Krishna. Every pastime Lord Rama read, there is a message. It's hidden message. They say. In Sita Ma's case, what was the hidden message Lord Rama gave to the mankind in banishing Mother Sita?
In banishing Sita.
Mother Sita.
Controversial question. In brief, we can say that Rama is Maryada Purushottam. He came to teach the path of Dharma. As a king who takes taxes from and respect from and expects to be obeyed by all the subjects, he had to set the standard of ideal character. There's no fault in Sita, but fault was ascribed to her. So for that purpose, Rama thought that even though there's no fault in Sita, if it's perceived that there's fault in her, then others will take that as an excuse to act wrongly. People may take it as an excuse that, well, it doesn't matter if your wife runs off with someone else, you can take her back and it doesn't matter. It's all okay. So for that reason, Ram had to banish Sita for the higher purpose of instructing the world in the proper standard of human behavior. That's it in brief. There is a book which I just looked at. I'm going to get a copy. That you have that book in your library.
Yes.
That's called The Right Side by Govinda Das. And that discusses various topics like that. So you could borrow the book or order it yourself, and it discusses all kinds of things. Again, I didn't read the book, but it covers topics like Karna appeared to be another one who was mistreated, and all kinds of topics like that from Ramayana and Mahabharata. Hare Krishna. Vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindhubhya evacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo